Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 99-year-old George Medeiros of Gustine, California. Originally from New Bedford, Massachusetts, followed by more than a decade in the Azores, George chose to return to his native USA as opposed to being drafted into the Portuguese Army during World War II. Our Army sent him to Italy and then Greece. So both of your parents had passed before you even went into the service. Did you hear from your sister or anyone while you were overseas?
Yeah, I at that time was hard to write because they didn't want to let the enemy know about your mailing, where it was going and what. But when I was coming from Portugal to the United States, I came on a Portuguese ship. It was a cargo ship, but they had room for 12 passengers, and I was one of them. And I was told if I was stopped by a German submarine to make believe that I was one of the workers, because otherwise they would take me in, because I was coming to the United States. But we were lucky we were never stopped by a German submarine. So that was one of the scares.
Yeah, like I said, you've been through some stuff in your life that most of us haven't been. So, you know, you said you're in Italy for close to a year. That's a long time. You must have seen some of the evidence of war, some of the devastated towns. Or
German prisoners passed by us, you know, and things of that sort. And we had fixing some of the buildings. When I was transferred to the engineers, we were fixing some of the buildings close to the front line to accommodate for the Americans who get wounded. They had a place to go to.
And let's talk about that, switching from an infantry outfit to an engineer battalion. How did that happen and how did you feel about it?
Well, I was happy in a way because I heard so much about the infantry going to France, and they did go to France. There were rumors already that we were going to France. So I was happy that I didn't go. Instead, I went to Greece because then they had a strip for the planes to land. Mm-hmm. We went over there to extend that strip, airstrip, in Greece. So that's when I spent 8 months there. 1945, when the war ended. And that's when I came home.
And I believe that airstrip that you extended, that's an airstrip that the Nazis had been using, right?
I don't know too much about that part. Mm-hmm. But I do know that they needed to have the big planes to be able to land. And they didn't have an airstrip long enough to accommodate them.
Maybe you can help us understand, too, just the day-to-day, because you were over there, you know, in wartime for quite a while. Where'd you sleep? What'd you eat? What was the day-to-day life like?
We had tents. Uh-huh. They were already built over there before we arrived. And there was about six to each tent that we slept on. So it's in Greece.
What about before that, as you made your way through Italy?
In Italy also, we slept in tents. And at that time, everything was, the food was like potted potatoes, potted eggs. was not too good. Because everything was powder, looked like it. So I was happy when we went to the engineer, things changed, even the food.
And how did you get along with the other guys in your unit?
Oh, pretty well. I never had any problems. Yeah, we done pretty well with it.
I'm just wondering about that because I've talked to a lot of veterans from a lot of different backgrounds. And, you know, at the time the military was segregated, all the African-Americans by themselves, the Japanese-Americans.
I didn't have any blacks on it. Mm-hmm. Was a mixture, Italians, Irish, different, but most of them white.
Were you the only one from the Azores?
Yes, and I couldn't speak too much English. I still have a problem, but at that time it was a huge problem. But I was forced to learn.
Did anybody make fun of you or pick on you because of that?
Well, little jokes like, you know, here and there. But I learned to take care of that. Mm-hmm. So I done pretty well.
Did they have a nickname for you or anything?
No. I know it was just Medeiros.
What was the hardest thing for you with all that time in the Army? What was the most challenging part of it for you?
Was in Italy when I landed. That was the hardest part. And Civitavecchia too, when I was transferred to Civitavecchia. Because those mines and everything were always very dangerous to step on out of the cleared places. Very bad.
And I don't know if this is an easy question to remember back this far and think about, but when you were going overseas, did you think about whether or not you'd come home? Was there a thought, hey, I might not make it back?
I thought I wasn't going to make it back. I really did. And I saw I didn't have anybody to, when I left on the train to go to Florida. The other ones, they had their families and everything, but I was all alone. But I was able to adjust and take care of myself. It was hard because I saw the other ones with the families and I didn't have anybody. But thank God I done well. And I came home.
Yeah.
I was blessed.
How much did you interact with the civilians, whether in Italy or Greece or wherever?
I don't know well with the civilians because we had civilians working for us on repairing some of the buildings, you know. I don't know well with the civilians. They respected us, at least my unit, and we got along real well.
Did you ever have any funny experiences in the Army, things that made you laugh?
Well, I had some time off, you know, and I used to go out and try to meet the people, especially girls, because I was only between 20 and 21. So that was an experience. I did meet some of the people. They used to come to us and ask, can I take you to have breakfast? Because they knew that we had like a powdered eggs, and so they used to tell us to have, they had a good place to take me to have breakfast with real good breakfast. So that was about it. I had a captain, a very good person, because one of the times, you know, was really, really hot, and me and the guy used to smoke. I don't smoke any longer. And me and the other guy, we thought we'd go and sit in the shade, take a break, because it was hot. So we were sitting down, and just suddenly I see these nice shoes coming along. I figured it was an officer. So I looked up, it was a colonel checking on us. So we stood up, saluted him. He asked for a serial number, because we had numbers. And that was it. But nothing happened. I was surprised because I asked the sergeant that was in the office. I said, hey, didn't you get something about this colonel? He says, yes, we did. I did, but my company said, no, our officer is going to punish my men. And he told the sergeant to throw the report on a waste basket. So I was really, I thought I was going to be maybe doing foxholes or something, punished, you know, to do something. Mm-hmm. But no, that was the closest I get to be in trouble. But I tried to go by the rules.
You know, you mentioned the first night you got there having to dive in a foxhole because it was an air raid. What were some of the other hazards that you had to deal with along the way? Did you have like enemy artillery coming in? Were you dealing with sniper fire? Were there other things?
There was a lot of fire going up, mm-hmm. and was a lot of focusing searchlight to try to. I did see the plane, but it was coming pretty high, and they were shooting up. We were shooting up.
Did you ever get a sense for what it meant to the people of Italy to have you guys there liberating them from Mussolini and that regime?
Yes, we did. Some of them, they recognized that, and they welcome us, and they very pleasant people. You know, I didn't have no problem with the population.
The other thing that came to mind for me, you know, because I grew up with a lot of Azorean Portuguese friends, and Portuguesa isn't too different from Espanol, yeah. And Italiano isn't too far off either.
No, not the northern part of Italy.
Yeah.
Was very easy to get to talk to. They have different dialects. I'm going to tell you one example is when I was transferred to the other unit. I was in charge of equipment, and they used to come and ask me for nails. In Portuguese, it's pregos. So I said, pregos? They said, no. I showed them all, they said, pontilhos. I said, okay, but pontilhos. So it happens that when we went to Civitavecchia, they came and asked me for nails. And I said, oh, pontilhos. They said, they looked at it and said, they said, no, it's pregos. I said, I get mixed up. I said, oh, no. So this was from the northern part, was more similar to the Portuguese language than the south. Naples was very hard, but up northern part, it was easy.
Are there some things, you know, maybe some sites, some things you witnessed, some events or places that you can still see in your memory now? You can picture being there or seeing this or that?
I went, when we had a chance to time off, I went all over Rome, and I went to the ancient Calcium. I visit that, and a lot of forts and lots of museums and things like that. I did quite a bit. I enjoyed that.
Well, if there's anything else about your time overseas, I'd love to hear it. But also coming back to the States after all that, what was that like?
It was not easy because I came back, I got sick. And while I was in Italy, I got huge cough and bleeding through my mouth. And they even put me in the English hospital for about a week to rest, mm-hmm. because they didn't have an American, because it was... Greece was occupied by English, so they had an English hospital. So they sent me to an English hospital. And I was over there about a week. I drank a lot of tea. Every few minutes it would give me tea.
That sounds like a kind of scary to not understand what's going on with your lungs and everything.
And then when I came to the United States, I broke up again. That's why because I was in love with this girl. I was fully, again, I started coughing and bleeding. I was wanted to go to school to take a high school diploma and maybe to be a pharmacist. So I was going on the GI Bill of Rights, going to school. But the teacher, she saw me coughing and bleeding. She called the army nurses division, and they sent me to pick me up, and they took me in to test me, and they thought I had tuberculosis. Mm. So I spent 3 months in the hospital over there, Rutland Heights, and they were ready to operate on my lung, because they discovered I didn't have TB. So I went to another hospital to be operated on. I had bronchiectasis, spots on my lungs. So it was to remove that. So this young doctor called me in his office before all the tests were made, and he showed me what was wrong with me. He said, I'm going to remove all that these spots, you won't have much left of lungs. I said, well, what would you do if you were in my place? He says, I wouldn't do it. I said, I'm not going to do it. Then what do you recommend? He said, to go to a place where far away from big bodies of water, warm place, that you would do much better. So I said, well, I was doing good in St. Michael, Azores. He said, you're not going to do well because it's an island and it's damp and all that. And I'm still going to go. I'm going to try it. I went. He was right. I was coughing a lot and bleeding. Then I told my brother-in-law. I had a brother-in-law married to my sister that took care of us. And he was in a seminary to be a priest. But then he changed when he met my sister and he got married. And I told him about what the doctor told me. He says, when I was in a seminary, I met this. He's a priest now and he's in California. Maybe I got to get in contact with him. Maybe he can help you. He did. He found out from his family that he wrote to him, and he said, send him over. So I came over to California all alone. I didn't know a soul. I came to this priest. He was in Turlock, and that's how I came to California. I didn't know anybody. This priest knew a family from one of the towns close to the one over there in St. Michael. So I went to this family, and they took me in, and I was start working on a creamery. And I wish I had kept the address of this young doctor, because I started doing well immediately.
And wait until you hear the wild story of how he connected with his wife of 72 years, Odilia. It's time for our final break. You can find photos and a short video with George Medeiros online at hometownheroesradio.com or on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.